been such a...
I think that after the coffee break, we have the opportunity to open a discussion. Our speakers have spoken about issues which may stimulate you to give some comments or ask questions. So we have half an hour for a discussion or a debate. I think now that the debate is open, so if you have questions, please ask.
Thank you, Chairman. Before I put my question, I want to remind, in the name of NATO PA, and I want to remind also as a parliamentarian, that the discussions in our seminars are not only open for parliamentarians, but also for the academics. And as a parliamentarian, it's very interesting to hear our colleagues, but also the academic world. So I just wanted to clarify this, that everybody in this room is invited to participate in the discussions, the academics, the parliamentarians, the ambassadors, and all the people present in this room. So let me come to my first question. When in the European Union or when in Western Europe we talk about the Balkans, we always put a big importance on multi-ethnicity in the Balkans. Whereas I observe that multi-ethnicity in my part of Europe, in Western Europe, when we see it in the perspective of immigration and integration, there is a change of mentality, which I regret. For example, 2 days ago, German Chancellor said that the multicultural society is dead, and I see development in some Western European countries which worry me. So I would like to ask Mr. Perdue if he sees a contradiction in this. And then my second question is, I listened very carefully to the opening remarks of Mr. Perdue, and you've talked a lot about the role of the European Union and about the United States. You briefly mentioned Russia as a partner in this, so I would like to, and then Turkey, of course, also, but we will get the opportunity to have a Turkish speaker here to explain us their views. So maybe I would like to learn a bit more also about the role and the implication of Russia in this area. Thank you very much.
Povedajte, gospodine Perdue.
I think we do have to be a little careful about overemphasizing. Not overemphasizing. I don't think you can overemphasize, but I think lecturing people about multiculturalism. A fully integrated society, the kind that I spoke of in my presentation, is a goal for all of us, but we're all imperfect in this regard. Now, Americans are particularly proud of our multicultural past because, frankly, we all came from somewhere else. I mean, and therefore, the integration of different cultures is a part of our fabric, but it's far from perfect in the United States. So I think any time you discuss multicultural aspects of any society, no one can speak with absolute authority on this because we all have hard work to do. I think there are two strains on the goal of multicultural societies today. One is economic, jobs. And rightly or wrongly, there is always the impression that people who are coming in from outside your country are taking away from jobs from those who have lost them due to some economic problems that we're having today. So we're all having economic problems, and I think that puts a stress on the acceptance of new immigrants into a country. The second strain, I think, that's caused today is particularly acute, and that's come about because of a very extreme form of Islam that has caused caused, of course, tremendous problems in our country, in my country. We in the United States have to really resist the temptation to become very hostile toward the Muslim society in the U.S. over this. And we've had some incidents in which we have had problems, but the official position of the United States government, thankfully, and of our society generally, is that we accept Islam. We recognize that we're being threatened by a very small minority. But I think economic pressure and the arise of an extreme form of Islam has put more pressure on multiculturalism throughout the world than we've had in the past. But I would hope, I didn't hear Mrs. Merkel's entire comment, so I don't have the context of it. If she may have been stating in her mind what she sees to be a fact. But I would hope that she would have gone on to say this is a reality, that it has not worked as well as it should have, and that we need to take measures to repair that. Because, quite frankly, no society can exist as it was before. I mean, it just doesn't happen. Populations are too mobile. There's, again, no way that you can create areas that are ethnically distinct. And so we have to work out a way to resolve these problems. I think this is for Western Europe, and I don't think Germany is unique in this regard. I mean, there are problems in Belgium, there are problems in France, there are problems in a lot of places where minorities, particularly new minorities, are simply not well accepted in society. But it goes back to the point I made in my speech, and that is, are these minorities, do they have the opportunities? Do they have equal protection under law? Do they have opportunities to go to school, to join the police force, and so forth? If they do, then I think there's hope. It's exclusionary policies that I think are the biggest problem. And I could ramble on for this. I think this is a topic for another very important conference, both in the United States and in Europe. Russia, let me just say, I worked very extensively with Russia in the Dayton process, and Russia was a very powerful contributor to the success of the Dayton Agreement. Russia has taken a much more independent stance regarding the Balkans, particularly with regard to Kosovo. And Russia is an important player in this region. There is no question about that. It's a matter of whether that Russia's actions are helping these countries creatively to develop and to resolve their problems or not. And that, I think, is for Russia to decide. But Russia is a player, and it's going to continue to be a player. I think its contributions, frankly, were more constructive in the early 90s than they have been on the Kosovo area. Thank you.
Faleminderit zoti për ju. Radhës për pyetje zoti Vajterdem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ambassador, for your presentation. You mentioned during your presentation Turkey's name also. As you know, Turkey has very historical, deep ties with this region, remaining from Ottoman time. Ottoman respect strongly to the different ethnicity, languages, and cultures, etc., in this region. Right after the Yugoslavia dissolved, Turkey established political, diplomatic, economic relationship with these countries. We have our president organized trilateral consultation meeting with the president of Serbia, president of Bosnia and Herzegovina, and those three countries, Minister of Foreign Affairs also meeting from time to time to improve the especially administration in Bosnia and Herzegovina. I think Turkey's efforts should be supported with EU. Turkey is not member of EU, as you know, negotiating country. Of course, Turkey will make efforts, his own efforts in this region, to improve the stability, security, and economic development in this region. But if Turkey becomes member of EU, I am sure Turkey's efforts, Turkey's contribution will be stronger. So now, for instance, Turkey has 7 high school colleges in this country, in Macedonia. But these efforts should be concerted together with the European Union and the United States. But as you all know, I think the Balkans countries are very important. The stability and security in Balkans country is very important for the Euro-Atlantic security. The name issue should be solved as soon as possible. I think United States, EU should make more efforts, because this negotiation is going on under the United Nations, but it goes very slowly.
It's very important for Russia.
Many years has passed. Because of the just name issue, it is very symbolic issue that Macedonia is away from the NATO, outside of the NATO. This is not, I think, good for EU and for the region. So I think the United States should play a role to solve this name issue. A little bit pressure should be put on Greece and to convince Greece that the name or accepted name between these two countries should be, I think, solved. So this is my comments at the moment. Tomorrow, one of the Turkish academicians will elaborate more Turkey's involvement, Turkey's efforts in this region. Thank you very much.
I also thank you. If Mr. Perdue, if you have anything to add.
Turkey has important interests in the region, historic interests, but also modern and current interest in the region. Turkey has been a constructive player in helping to resolve the issues that have plagued this region for the last 15 years or so. Turkey is going to continue to be a major factor in this region. Turkey is a booming economic power. It has economic interests here. It has security interests, and so we're confident that Turkey will continue to have a positive role to play. And of course, the United States, and I'm sure Europeans as well, look forward to working with Turkey. We're going to have a discussion on Turkey later, so I think we'll stop there.
Falënderit zoti Perdiu. Sipas radhës zoti Pavle Trajanov urdhënon.
Благодарю. Јас имам куст коментар и прашање до господинот Пердју. Значи, Република Македонија после осамостојувањето или после поделбата во Југославија.
After the independence of Macedonia from Yugoslavia. So after 90s, after the breakup of Yugoslavia, Macedonia became an independent country. And during the 1990s, all the political parties and the citizens of Macedonia, all the governments had two priorities. Two principal goals: to join EU and to join NATO. So during these 20 years, all the governments, the parliaments and the institutions, media, the NGOs, they have done a lot to have successful reforms in defense, according to NATO experts. We've fulfilled all the criteria for NATO membership, and the reforms which were necessary for strengthening the democracy capacities and for EU accession, we are moving according to the planned dynamics. So these two processes were a strong motivation, a propellant force of the Republic of Macedonia. In the last 2 years, there have been some frustrations, but our top state national priority is that Macedonia joins NATO and start the EU accession negotiations. So you've said, and the gentleman from Turkey said, that this name dispute is a dispute that stopped Macedonian EU and NATO accession. And since you, Mr. Perdiu, were successful mediator in 2001, you have a lot of experience on the Balkans. Do you have a key how to solve this name dispute issue with Greece, so that Macedonia could in the Lisbon summit could receive an invitation for NATO membership and to start the EU accession negotiations, since all say that this is a bilateral issue between Macedonia and Greece and that they should find some reasonable compromise solution? Our government is prepared for a compromise which will not threaten the national identity of Macedonian people, its culture. And we have Mr. Matthew Nimitz, the UN representative, conducting this process. But we haven't heard some specific solution which would be acceptable for both parties. So, do you have some suggestion how to achieve as soon as possible a solution and to restart the EU and NATO integration, Macedonians EU and NATO integration?
Well, once again, I have the opportunity to
повторно имам можност да ги критикувам.
I think Macedonia should have been admitted to NATO in 2008 without regard to the resolution of the name issue. I think for NATO to have, for the NATO countries, I say NATO, but it really boils down to the countries, including the United States, to have denied Macedonia access to membership in NATO over this name issue, they was essentially to avoid the issue. And I don't think that was wise. I think NATO should have moved forward with admissions and kept the name issue as a separate item to be negotiated between Macedonia and Greece. Now that they have chosen to stay passive and remain on the sidelines, not NATO as an institution, but the nations of NATO, I think they've allowed this problem to continue to be unresolved. I think it will be very difficult for Greece and Macedonia to come to a successful resolution of this issue without the strong support of the international community in a negotiation. Not that the international community has to take a side, but the international community should be a party to the negotiations and, frankly, put pressure on both sides to reach a reasonable conclusion. I don't have a preference. This is something the nations have to work out. But I do think it's critical that you have international pressure from the European Union and from the United States on the parties to come to a conclusion on this. Otherwise, I described in my presentation as neglect, and I think it's just that. I think they're neglecting to help solve this problem.
Falendarit zoti për ju. Si pas radhës, zoti Ivo Miro Jović i Bosne e Cegovine.
Благодарам, господин. Thank you. I also thank the translators that I will have the opportunity to speak in Croatian. All of us present here in this hall will understand that we, citizens of Bosnia and Herzegovina, thank NATO and the member parties of NATO, which helped for the war in Bosnia to stop. However, it should be clear that in Dayton, a vampire state has been created, a mission impossible out of a state. Namely, an unjust, dysfunctional, and very expensive state has been created. A state, a country of two entities and three nations, three ethnicities. One ethnicity for Serbians, a second for Bosnians, and the Croatians are leaseholders there. I haven't heard for 13th century Croats have been living in Bosnia, and they have no one to separate from. That's their country. You've emphasized two nationalisms here and two separatisms, segregations. But you called my country by its unconstitutional name. By its constitution, my country is Bosnia and Herzegovina. And I think that you've, in your statement, we can see an orientation that Bosnia is a country, there's a Bosnian language, and then Bosnia is a Muslim country. This is how we experience in Bosnia, the citizens of Bosnia. We have a desire, and we can create a country of equal, nations with equal rights, create a cheaper and more functional country. And two, three hours ago, we've heard the results of the elections, and you're speaking about new time of for Bosnia. But you know that the Bosnians have elected a Croat to be their president. So in the next mandate, Bosnia will have two Bosniaks in the presidency and one Serbian. And instead of indicating the injustice in Bosnia, that and to indicate that Bosnia has a future, you say that Croats are separatists. I don't know why. The Albanians in Bosnia and Herzegovina, with the support of part of the world in Serbia, have got their own country. We Croats, as a nation in Yugoslavia, we cannot get a TV or radio channel in Bosnia. This is a disgrace for USA and for Europe and for the whole international community.
Well, I think
let
me say this. If Bosnia is a dysfunctional state, which I think it is, and I think you agree with that, then
I Herzegovina.
Bosnia and Herzegovina.
This is the kind of thing that really frustrates Americans, and I think perhaps some Europeans. If you're a citizen of Bosnia and Herzegovina, and the issue that you want to fight about is whether or not you've got this number or that number of presidents and so forth, is much less important to me than whether or not you have picked the best person to be president of your country. When you can start talking about who is the best candidate to represent the interest of the people and stop emphasizing whether this person is a Croat or a Serbian or a Bosniak, then I think we will have made real progress. But as long as you're talking about TV channels and the long name of a country rather than what is commonly referred to, as long as you're talking about percentages of this institution and that institution, and because you're talking about separation, and as long as you're talking about separation, you're never going to go anywhere. That's my personal view. So, I appreciate your response. I appreciate you feel very strongly about this, but I think you're wrong. And I think that at some point in time, the people of Bosnia are going to want leaders who can see the interest of the entire country and not just their little piece of it. And when there are leaders in the place in Bosnia who quit talking about being a Croat or a Serb but talk about being a citizen of Bosnia, Herzegovina, then I think we will have made real progress. But as long as all we're doing is hearing about the Croat part and the Serbian part and the Bosniak part, then I think you're going nowhere. And that's unfortunate for you, because I think if there's a problem with Bosnia, it largely resides with the people, the leaders in Bosnia, who don't have a vision of a unified country. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Perdue. Before giving the next floor, I'd like to emphasize that we have two more speakers, Mr. Ismet Ramadani and Ms. Sliska. So are there any other speakers? If no, we have Mr. Ismet Ramadani and Ms. Sliska. Thank you.
Мне предоставили.
Исмет Рамадани две зона слишком. Исмет Рамадани Урдани.
И фалундерит за ты талат.
Thank you, Mr. Talat. As a representative of the Euro-Atlantic Alliance, as the Vice President of the Council, first of all, I would like to agree with the perspective regarding the developments on the Balkans given by Mr. Perdue from the 19th onwards. But I would like to remind the seminar also of a meeting held in Ohrid when I presented the idea of a Benelux on the Balkans, including Macedonia, Albania, Kosovo, and Montenegro as members. The aim at that time was to set an example how these countries should develop economically and with political support from the international community, from the United States and the European Union. Then a debate was opened. This was not seen as a viable idea because Kosovo had not been recognized, or Kosovo is not an internationally recognized state. Albania had an internal crisis in 97, and Montenegro was not independent at that time. Macedonia fulfilled the criteria, but all of these countries nonetheless took very fast strides forward. Albania is in NATO, Kosovo and Montenegro are developing well, but Macedonia, because of the name, is treading in one place. Knowing Ambassador Perdue from 2001 personally, since at that time we had a lot of work, namely the discussions held within or as part of the Ohrid Framework Agreement. As a result of all of this, my question is the following. Do you think that the level of mediation should increase, mediation but also pressure for finding a solution regarding the name issue with Macedonia, so that Macedonia can take its final step towards full membership in NATO and starting the negotiations for membership in the EU? And regarding the Ohrid Framework Agreement, do you believe that the dynamics of its implementation is being pursued as it should be? Or rather, do you believe that it would be a good idea that you come here with Mr. Lyotard about the state of play regarding the implementation of the Ohrid Framework Agreement?
That regarding Ohrid, Macedonia has done quite well at implementing the agreement, and I'm sure there are issues that have not been finally resolved and some things to still work on, but I don't think it would be helpful for Lyotard or I come back and somehow give Macedonia a grade on how you've done on Ohrid implementation. I try to help in that regard. I think Macedonia is mature enough, developed enough to handle the implementation of Ohrid on its own. And I don't follow every detail of everything in a fine-grained detail, it's my understanding that the follow-through has been pretty solid on that. I've already talked about the fact that I think there should be more international engagement in the negotiation of the name issue to help the parties reach some solution. I don't think I need to say anything more about that. You did raise one point I want to comment on, and that is regional cooperation. I think, you know, when I have to continue to fly from Vienna if I want to go to Zagreb, I have to fly to Vienna to get there. You know, it's there's a lack of coordination, cooperation within the region that I think would be helpful if some of these barriers were broken down. But again, I think that has to do a lot with economic development. And if the economy in the region was developed further, then you would see a lot more pressure for economic coordination. I mean, as when I was ambassador in Bulgaria, I worked hard on trying to get American investment to come to Bulgaria. And one thing I discovered was that in any given country in the region, it's a small market, and therefore it's hard to get people to come here and to invest. But if you look at the region as a whole, all the nations of the whole, as a whole, then Southeastern Europe is quite a large market. And that means that you've got to have some international coordination within the region on economic development, investment, and so forth. When that happens, I think it will be a benefit to everybody that there be more economic cooperation and coordination. Thank you.
Thank you. Now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to say that the name of the country, the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, well, implies a kind of an uncertain status for the state, and of course some agreement must be reached. In 1992, there was a decree of the Russian president recognizing Macedonia under its constitutional name, the Republic of Macedonia. That means
о другом. Вот мы уже много лет с моим турецким
Сецка. Включен. I have been interpreting. Can you hear me now? I would like to say that the situation is far from pleasant with the name of the republic, the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia. The question arises whether it exists at present or not. Of course, we must reach some agreement on its name. Russia recognized the Republic of Macedonia in 1992 by the president's decree, and in all our official documents, we refer to it as the Republic of Macedonia. In the mass media, it is referred to like this. But I would also like to say a different thing. Well, we have been working with our Turkish colleagues for 11 years, and we have been discussing the issue of when Turkey will become a member of the EU. How many pretexts can be sought up in order to prevent Turkey from becoming an EU member? And for Macedonia now, the constitutional name of the republic is a problem for Greece, a member of NATO. And if Kosovo decides to join the European Union or NATO, how long will it take for these organizations to take a decision on admitting it? I'm asking Mr. Padiou about it. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Padiou.
I didn't realize that that Russia had officially recognized Macedonia's name, so that's a good development, I think. We certainly agree with Russian Federation that the name issue needs to be resolved internationally as soon as possible. That's why I call for more international engagement. Turkey and the EU, I defer to my European colleagues on that one. I don't think I want to get into that particular subject publicly, although I have to say that personally I have a great deal of sympathy for Turkey. I lived there for 2 years of my professional life, and I think if Turkey, on a personal level, if Turkey wants to be in the EU and the standards are set and Turkey meets those standards, then I say why not. As to Kosovo's membership in NATO and the European Union, I think we're a good long ways away from that. The independence of Kosovo is just too new. In terms of NATO, their military capabilities are by design very modest, and while I'm sure they have strong ambitions to be members of both of those institutions, there are standards that have to be met for membership in both of them, and I think they have a very long way to go, certainly on the NATO side, but I'm sure on the EU side as well. Thank you.
Faleminderit dhe juve zotë Përgju. Mendoj që këtu mund të...
Thank you, Ambassador Përgju. I think we can close this first session. I think everyone who wanted to has taken the floor. Before closing the session, I would like to inform you that the next session, the afternoon session, will begin at 2:45 p.m. The moderator will be Mr. Lan. I hereby then close the session. We have free time now. We see each other again at 2:45.